Coming up on the show, Rory McIlroy on the mic today at the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship, hitting on a number of topics. LIV Golf's changes to 72 holes. Who's longer, him or Marco Penge? And beers on Rory in Abu Dhabi? You're going to want to hear this. Plus, the newest PGA Tour member, Michael Brennan, joins the show. From sponsor invite to Bank of Utah Championship winner in the span of a week, his story, one of the best we've seen on the PGA Tour this fall. How's the 23-year-old preparing for the next step in his career? We're going to find out. And speaking of Mexico, the defending Worldwide Technology Championship winner, Austin Eckroat, will stop by for a chat. After a two-win season in 2024, the sequel in 25 hasn't lived up to his expectations. We're going to get his title defense mindset as Golf Today starts right now.
Golf Today.
Hey, hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of Golf Today. I'm George Savarikas, pleased to be sitting alongside Jordan Cornette for the next couple hours. And it's always funny to me when I talk with friends who are casual golf fans. They're like, oh, what's the offseason like? Or what's later in the year like when it comes to the world of golf? And when you have a 24/7, 365 golf network and players who are playing a year-round global schedule like Rory McIlroy, the offseason has really shrunk and shrunk over time. And I think for international golf fans, it's been a treat to see how much Rory has played post the FedEx Cup playoffs, at least on the DP World.
Yeah, and I think there's also a desire to see even more of Rory given the year he's had. I think people are definitely clamoring, George, to try and get as much of him as they can right now because it feels like prime Rory is going on right now.
And it's basically been a year-long victory lap for Rory McIlroy based on what he's done and everything he's been able to achieve in 2025. It's likely going to go down as the greatest year in Rory McIlroy's career, or at least the most impactful. In March, he won his second career Players' Championship in a playoff that Monday finish, beating J.J. Spawn to get the win. And remember, in February, he had also won at Pebble Beach. So a couple big wins, and that was just building all this momentum for Rory McIlroy, and it paid off a month later. Rory finally climbing the mountain, winning the Masters, and slipping on the green jacket at Augusta National. That emotional scene on the 18th green, the playoff victory over Justin Rose, becoming just the sixth player in the history of golf to complete the modern day career Grand Slam.
George, it didn't stop there. How about in September, Rory won his second career Irish Open, and he did it in dramatic fashion, draining an eagle putt on the 72nd hole to force a playoff. Rory would go on to win that playoff on the third extra hole and celebrated, most importantly, in front of his home fans. Pretty electric scene there. Continuing on later that month, Rory did what he said is arguably one of the hardest things to do in the sport. Came over here on American soil and won a Road Rider Cup. The Europeans, led by Captain Luke Donald, defeated the United States at Bethpage Black to retain the Ryder Cup. And here's a look at Rory's magical season. A lot of bullet points there and some impressive ones. Ultimately, the apex, many would say, is Augusta completing that career Grand Slam, that second career Players' Championship, the Irish Open, beginning it all with the Pebble Beach Pro-Am win, 3-1-1 in the Ryder Cup, and poised for his seventh race to Dubai title. He's positioned pretty nicely there right now, George.
And let's get right to that, Jordan. It's time to take a look at this week's Rolex Series event. It's the DP World Tour's best players in Abu Dhabi this week, Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. This week marks the first leg of a doubleheader. It's a two-week DP World Tour playoff. 70 players in the field. The top 50 advance to the DP World Tour Championship next week. Rory McIlroy among the headliners this week, and he knows a thing or two about winning Race to Dubai titles. He's won six all time, so he's trying to chase down, like Jordan hinted, that elusive seventh Harry Vardon Trophy. And if he were able to get it, he would become a player who is just one behind Colin Montgomery's all-time mark, who had eight. Earlier today, Rory met the media in the Middle East.
Rory, if I could just stray into some golf politics, because obviously there was the story yesterday with LIV announcing that they're moving to 72 holes and people suggesting that that might pave the way for them to get official golf rankings and that sort of thing. Just wondered what your take is on that, and do you think that they should, you know, start getting the ranking points?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a... I think it's a peculiar move because I think they could have got ranking points with three rounds. I don't think the three rounds versus four rounds was what was holding them back. But yeah, I don't, it certainly puts them more in line with traditional golf tournaments and sort of what we've all done. You know, it brings them back into not really being a disruptor and sort of falling more in line with what everyone else does. So, but if that's what they felt they needed to do to get the ranking points, then I guess that's what they had to do. I think what's hard is you've got, the live guys are going to play and say potentially they get world ranking points, but because their strength of fields are going to be so weak, because a lot of the guys have fallen already in the world rankings because they haven't had ranking points for so long, I don't know if the ranking points are really going to benefit them, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Two questions. One is about the schedule. Around this time last year, you were thinking of cutting down your schedule, which you did, and still you are leading and you are closing on Colin Montgomery's titles. In hindsight, or how do you think this is playing out? Would this be the way forward for the next seasons as well with your schedules?
Yeah, I would say, if anything, playing even less than I have this year. I think I'll play the same amount of tournaments on the DP World Tour, if not more. But, I've alluded to the fact that, I'm going to play a little bit less just throughout the year. Really prioritize the major championships and a few of the other bigger events. But, the world of golf does a really good job of keeping you, I describe it as keeping you on the hamster wheel. And sometimes it's nice to get off that hamster wheel and sort of do things your own way. So yeah, I'm not getting any younger. If I want to play for another competitively for another 10 years, like Justin Rose has, for example, I have to remember that I'm not 23 anymore, and I can't play that schedule forever. So I think to try to have the longevity that I want to have, I'm going to have to cut back my schedule a little bit over these next few years to make sure that I stay injury free and I play up until the point that I want to.
Here's a current look at the Race to Dubai standings. Roy leads the way, just 2 weeks to go in the season. And I mentioned Marco Penge at the top of the show. Those two guys won two in the rankings. Penge has won three times on the DP World Tour, and they are 2-3 in driving distance paired together in the first round, so it'll be fun to see the back and forth between two of the biggest hitters in the game. But we hear Rory on the mic. He's always so open and honest with where his head is at and what's on his mind. What was your takeaway from what he shared?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about his reaction to Liv starting there, I mean, he checked all the bullet points, I think, of what everybody was thinking of. The only thing he didn't use was the word desperation from Liv, because that's the only thing that he missed maybe there, and he was being polite, which I respect from Rory, but he nailed everything there. As it pertains to his schedule, I think it's all warranted as well. Everything that came out of Rory's mouth, I was like, I get it. I mean, he went pro in 2007. Winning at Augusta was the last thing to check off the box. You add the sweetener of winning the Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black, and I think he feels like he's done it all, George. And now I think he's a guy that's thinking legacy, and what's legacy is doing what you want to do, playing in places, like he said, that he hasn't had a chance to play. I think about a conversation he mentioned that he had with Roger Federer, one of the greatest ever pick up a tennis racket, and Roger said at the back end of his career he wanted to play in places he wanted to play. You're going to see Rory go to India for the first time ever. You're going to see Rory play in the Australian Open for the first time in over a decade. This guy now, when you think about legacy, wants to do what he wants to do, and he wants to go try and stack up as many majors as possible and preserve himself to be able to do so. I have no issue with it.
I don't either. It's a fascinating change from where Rory was 2-3 years ago to where he is now, when he was kind of used to be the mouthpiece for the PGA Tour and was saying there was such an added emphasis on supporting the tour in a time of crisis, playing in the tour's biggest events, and now he's saying he's going to play less.
Well, do you think that also took a toll on him maybe a little bit?
100%.
And I think with the success that came after that.
Yeah, and I think he probably felt used a little bit, that he was the one who always had to speak for the PGA Tour versus leadership for the PGA Tour being out front with messaging. So I think he was fatigued from that. Plus, he has a home base in London. And I think his pull to be closer to Ireland and to family there, and I don't know that he's going to be year-round in London, but he enjoys spending time back in Europe, and he's saying he wants to play the DP World Tour more because a tour that he grew up playing and a tour that he wants to support. But I'm curious now, if you look at what he's done in his career, sixth guy to have the career Grand Slam, five majors. He's on the periphery of top 10 players all time, probably in that 10 to 15 category. If he makes a jump from five to, say, seven majors or five to eight, then you pass a whole slew of guys.
A different rare air.
Exactly. Then you're starting to look at top six in the game, top seven all time. It's like when you do NBA debates. And where is Steph Curry top 10 all time? He has four. Then if he gets to five, who does he jump? And that's the same with Rory, where he's at five right now. If he can even get to six, then you start passing a lot of people. And he says how important the majors are. I think that's what's going to be the fuel for him going into 26.
Yeah, and I think if you're the PGA Tour, there's a little bit of concern, right? Because as you mentioned, the group that stands to benefit most is the DP World Tour. He's going to be playing in more of those events. His home base is now there. He's not going to be playing in a lot of these even signature events, really, when it comes down to the PGA Tour, but chasing those majors. And I think you kind of get into start wading in waters of it kind of becomes a little bit of trepidation from PGA Tours. How many stars start to follow suit from an approach like this from a guy? Now these other players haven't achieved what Rory has, but if you get a level of success and you feel like, hey, I just need to hit the minimum so I can still chase majors, does it shift to that point? And is this kind of Rory leading guys that way? That could be dangerous territory if you're the PGA Tour.
I think it's more just a veteran move, and it's golf's version of load management, where you've seen Adam Scott also play. You have a finite amount of times you can get your game to peak throughout the course of a season. So I think Rory McIlroy knows that and embraces that. And to button it up and come full circle with the conversation, as far as what Rory said regarding LIV, agree with your stance. Rory hit the notes you kind of expected Rory to hit as far as the impact. It's kind of a strange move.
Confounding, yeah, absolutely.
Given the ethos of LIV, and LIV, the name itself, is 54. So it's to then go to...
Numerals got to change.
To go to 72, it's like, well, why didn't they do that at the outset if they're trying to chase world ranking points? Why didn't you play in the sandbox that had already been sketched out by the world of professional golf? Go 72 holes and have a cut at the outset. Now you're five of LIV. They're trying to do this. So I do agree with you. I don't know if desperation, it kind of leaned that direction,
I think you're a nicer guy. I think that's where you'd have to go with this, George, is they came in, and I loved that Rory used the word disruptor, because that's what they fashioned themselves to be when they came out. We'll be wearing shorts. We'll have the music. We'll play 54 holes. We're going to be different from the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour is winning. We're thriving on this side of things, and LIV is hemorrhaging money, and it's not working, and the sponsorships aren't there. The viewership isn't there. The stars are not as relevant over here anymore because of the world ranking, the inability to get those points because of the team format, because of their drop in the inability to chase points. And so to me, when you look at it, they're trying to get themselves closer to the PGA Tour to find success. That is the antithesis of being a disruptor. And so I love that Rory took a highbrow, a disciplined approach in addressing and basically cutting down at all these points what LIV's doing. But to me, when I saw the news, it reeked of desperation. It just did.
I just don't know how year four, through year four, if you were to objectively evaluate what LIV has done so far, that you could say that this has been a success. They've had maybe LIV Golf Adelaide and maybe certain events that have garnered support in that market. But overall, if you look at the product, the team structure, the level of competition, $5 billion reportedly spent, or in that ballpark, $4 to $5 billion at least. And this is the end result, where you have no world ranking points. You're now switching the format to 72 holes. There's just been a holistic failure in leadership from start to finish. And they've been kind of blowing from point to point with no real leadership or direction to lead them to a viable product. I think for the average golf fan, and I'm I was as open-minded as anyone.
100%.
I think, and I've had this debate with Brandel, either on air or off air. Like, I think there is an appetite for team golf beyond just a Ryder Cup or a President's Cup, maybe in the fall, and if you kept it to 4 weeks or something like that. Like, I don't think it's an all-or-nothing game.
Season-long approach is not the way.
The season-long is too much, and then the team name's not rooted in city, state, country, region, and you just had agents or non-marketing people create these out of the thin air. It's like, if you're a 10-year-old, why do you care about the range goats or the cliques or whatever?
Exactly.
And
there's
no defined free agency period to drum up interest. It's just been a failure from top down to really cultivate a fan base that cares about these teams year to year.
Well, again, LIV is hemorrhaging money, but I get the unlimited PIF funds. But at some point, you got to look at this and say, what are we doing? This conversation is such a good one. We're going to continue this here on Golf Today. We're going to go with another roundtable. Best part of the show, in my opinion. We got Rex and Lab coming in to join us with their thoughts on the future of LIV Golf and then the changes they're making in their tournament structure in 2025. As we roll along, stick with us.
The LPGA Tour announcing today a new co-sanctioned event with the Ladies European Tour in partnership with Golf Saudi. The Aramco Championship will take place April 2nd through 5th, 2026 at Shadow Creek Golf Club in Las Vegas and feature a $4 million purse. The 120-player event, the first tournament on a U.S. tour with backing from Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund. This from new LPGA Tour Commissioner Craig Kessler. The Aramco Championship, part of the PIP Global Series at Shadow Creek, reflects exactly where we're headed in building the global schedule for our tour. We often talk about routing, courses, and purses, and this event checks every box. A spectacular West Coast setting, an iconic course, and a purse that continues our momentum in raising the bar for our athletes. We also recognize that partnerships like this build on the LET, that's Ladies European Tour's longstanding collaboration with Golf Saudi, and PIP can help strengthen the women's game on a global scale and elevate opportunities for our athletes. You know what time it is. It's time now for a Golf Today Roundtable as we welcome in our friends of the show, GolfChannel.com senior writers Rex Hoggard and Ryan Labner. And Rex, let's start with the LPGA Tour news, the first big splash by new commissioner Craig Kessler, the first event backed by the Public Investment Fund and Golf Saudi that's going to happen in the U.S. as far as being co-sanctioned with the U.S.-based tour. Your reaction to the news?
It is worth pointing out sort of the difference in mentalities when it comes to the PIF, the Public Investment Fund, being involved with men's golf. It was so contentious from the very start with the launch of LIV Golf versus what it's been like, at least for the LET, the Ladies European Tour, as you pointed out. I've joked on numerous occasions that maybe if it wasn't LIV Golf, if they'd have called it the Aramco Series or something else, that maybe it would have gone down a little bit easier. I know that's not entirely fair, but you get the idea there. But there has always been a lot more collaboration between the LET and the Public Investment Fund and what they've created on that side of the pond. And they brought it over here a few times. And now that you have this collaboration that includes the LPGA Tour, I think we're going to see more and more players gravitate towards those types of series. Now, optimistically, I will look at this from the male perspective and point out that if you can have the LPGA Tour come up with some sort of collaborative effort with the Public Investment Fund, which this is, perhaps that paves the way for the PGA Tour. Keep in mind, they're strategic partners. So there's a lot of talking going on there. This seems like the logical next step, and you can see how the ladies embraced it. I don't know if you can make that jump to the men will do the same thing in the future.
Yeah, Rex, I do think it is a good case study, and this particular circumstance makes a lot of sense for all three parties involved. I mean, LPGA players, including Nelly Korda, the biggest American draw on the LPGA, had already been participating in the Aramco Series, so it makes sense to sort of loop that back in to a full-fledged LPGA event. The increased purses, the building on the global nature of the tour, and obviously from the Saudi PIF side, it really helps to be integrated into the U.S. marketplace. And so I think it's an entirely different set of circumstances with the state of women's golf in this country and the LPGA in particular. But I do think it could potentially serve as a case study for what's possible if there's potentially more partnership and more collaboration.
Rex, I want to go back to that statement made, which I 100% agree with, in terms of, you know, could this mean for the PGA Tour that maybe there's a desire. And I think we both know there's different set of circumstances between the LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour in terms of sense of urgency as it pertains to probably revenue, obviously leading the way with LPGA Tour here. But when we talk about sense of urgency with the PGA Tour, LIV Golf and PIF, does it feel like there's just no sense of urgency now more than ever for the PGA Tour to have a desire to work with LIV Golf?
First things first, Jordan, I have to give you a chef's kiss. No one has channeled your Eamon Lynch, your inner Eamon Lynch, better than you on this show today. And someone needs to take his place while he's out. So congratulations on that front. No, I don't think there's any urgency at all on the front of the PGA Tour when it comes to these negotiations. I like that. I don't think there's any urgency at all on the case of the PGA Tour, to be honest with you. And they haven't had a conversation since the White House meeting that included President Trump earlier this year. It gives you an idea of how stalled these negotiations actually are. If you're looking at it from Brian Rolapp's point of view, the CEO of the PGA Tour, why would you have any urgency? You already have a lot of money. You were flush with cash thanks to SSG, the private equity firm that signed on with the PGA Tour. You have a lot of momentum based on what happened this year. You look at the ratings for all of the signature events. You look at what he wants to do with the schedules. You look at what happened in the major championships. There's no reason at all for the Tour to come running back to the table right now. LPGA Tour was entirely different. They need that investment. They need that influx of cash. And they need to look globally much more so than they probably do right now. So that makes total sense. But if you're Brian Rolapp, I understand why you're dragging your feet on this. There's other things that he's concerned with, primarily his product and his product alone.
Lev, I know how much you love surprises, so let's play a game of fill in the blank here. And I just want you to end this sentence. LIV Golf's move to 72 holes is...
Complex, I would say. You know, I do think it's certainly ironic that, you know, what it was supposed to be a revolutionary idea has resorted to the same old thing that is tried and true and been proven over decades. That said, I do think it is a nuanced situation. I do see positives and negatives in this situation. Positively, if you're looking at this for LIV, I do think that the move from 54 holes to 72 holes does bring at least a semblance of legitimacy. It's now easier to extrapolate the results. It's easier to contextualize. I think it's easier for the players to prepare for major championships, for instance. Playing more competitive holes tends to suit the top players. And so I think a John Rahm, in particular, would be very happy with this move. And I think you could see sort of the dominant season in 2026 that a lot of us expected when he jumped to LIV Golf a couple of years ago. Negatively, though, I think it's pretty obvious as well that this is a league without an identity. This was a league that was supposed to be disruptive. It was supposed to be fresh. It was supposed to be innovative. It was supposed to be 54 holes. It was supposed to be built on speed and urgency. What is it now? It's essentially just a league of limited tournaments, limited fields, playing in far-flung locations for an outrageous sum of money. Does the team race, if 54 holes is off the table, and that was supposed to be a central tenet for LIV Golf, is the team component now the next thing to fall? Because that has not resonated. That has not turned into massive television audiences. That is something that has always been sort of clumsy since the outset of 2022. If you're LIV, I think the best play is not to lean into the team component over 72 holes. It would be to try and rival the DP World Tour as the preeminent global circuit. And so, yes, a lot of people are being caught up in the official World Golf Ranking race. Roy McIlroy pointed out, I think somewhat correctly, that the players who have been starved of world ranking points over the past couple of years are going to be so far down the rankings that they would have to do something extraordinary even to be relevant for these pathways that are going to open up for the major championships. So I think LIV is really at a crossroads trying to figure out exactly what it is. It is not a team-driven league as much as it wants to be. If I were LIV, I would try to expand the rosters and try to make this the preeminent global tour.
If I had to fill in the blank, I'd probably say window dressing on this front, because this is a twofold conversation. One, if you're making this move, if LIV Golf is making the move to 72 holes because of their quest for world ranking points, it doesn't make any sense. Rory McIlroy is 100% correct. 54-hole events were a problem. They were not the problem when it came to the reason why the World Golf Ranking did not grant that request for world ranking points a few years ago when LIV initially made it. This is all about what the players want. John Rahm has been pretty outspoken. You look at what happened talked about that. Initially, when the players were asked after that first season, they were asked in a questionnaire if they wanted to go move beyond 54 holes, and I think only three players agreed to doing that. I think this is a bit of a paradigm shift. Players are realizing that you've watched what John Rahm has done really the last 2 years. Maybe 54 holes of team golf and shorts with loud music isn't really the best way to prepare for major championships. And you have so many players out there that still want to compete in major championships, still want to be relevant on that level. And I just don't think this was ever going to help with the world ranking. But if you're doing this just to appease the players, I get that.
Rex, I kind of want to stay with my Eamon Lynch kind of persona today. And in doing so, let me ask you about Rory and his comments. We've heard him throughout the last few months, especially after his massive win at Augusta, but his schedule and how he's going to tailor it more to his liking, playing in places where he wants and kind of eliminate some of these PGA Tour events to chase majors. He's certainly deserved the right to do that. As you look at the PGA Tour, do you think they should be concerned that this could open way to maybe other players with success as they gain it to kind of earlier than maybe anticipated start to say, hey, I'm going to do somewhat of the same?
I think this is my turn to channel my inner Eamon Lynch on this one, because I'm going to point directly to SSG and point out that they're probably the ones that listened to those comments this morning from Roy McIlroy and got a little nervous about that, because you have one of your stars, maybe the star on the PGA Tour, at least as far as moving the engine when it comes to ratings and attention and visibility, telling everybody and essentially the world that, nope, I'm probably not going to play nearly as much on the PGA Tour. He was pretty clear saying that he's not taking those events off the DP World Tour schedule. So, yes, I think if you're SSG, if you're the folks at Fenway, you're going to be a little concerned because there isn't a lot of motivation. Look what Tiger Woods did, especially late in his career. He never played more than 15 events. Actually, he was closer to probably 12, 13, 14 events. I'm sure that's where Rory is going to end up going.
Something to certainly watch for in the future. Like Adam Scott said, he was competitively starved. So we'll see if that's the case for Rory McIlroy on the PGA Tour. All right, thanks, guys. If you're in the market for a podcast, check out the Golf Channel podcast with Rex Hoggard and Ryan Labner. And if you miss any of Golf Today, you can find our best interviews on the Golf Today podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page as well. And still to come on Golf Today, we're going to be joined by talented young star who is about to make a big decision about her playing future. Gianna Clement has played at the highest levels of the amateur game, now is ready to turn pro. She's going to join us on the other side of the short break.
And we welcome Gianna in now. And Gianna, look, an incredibly decorated amateur career. And the news is out there, but what a big day for you announcing that you're turning pro. How does it feel?
Well, it feels so great. It's been such a long time coming. Obviously, took my time making this decision, and I took a couple college visits, but I've wanted to play professional golf my whole life. So, yeah, just I'm thrilled to be able to go compete at Q School for my LPGA Tour card, and, yeah, it's a really exciting day.
Gianna, why now? Why do you turn pro now?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's path is different. There's lots of ways to get to the LPGA Tour. For me, golf is the only thing I've ever really wanted. So, you know, I gave myself a good opportunity at qualifying school this year and played really well. So I don't see a reason to delay it now. This is all I've ever wanted. So I'm excited to get after it.
George, we should believe Gianna when she says this is all she's ever wanted, because I read that your first tournament you played in, you were 5 years old?
It was.
And you went ahead and won that tournament. Tell me, what do you even remember from being 5 years old and playing in your first tournament ever?
Yeah, I don't remember much, but I remember that I was the only girl in my division. So I was thrilled to take home a first place medal, but in reality, I was the only girl in my division. But
I wasn't going to mention that.
No, but yeah, I was just so excited to take home that first place.
Looking at your website, up to the age of 14, you had won 133 times. You're the reigning AJGA Player of the Year. You're top 20 in the world amateur golf rankings on the women's side. How has this amateur success set you up for this next level as you embark on this journey as a professional?
I've been so lucky to get so many opportunities so young. I've played at the highest level of junior and amateur golf for over 5 years now, and have also been able to get some LPGA exemptions as an amateur, which is really exciting. And it's just such great experience for me. And I feel like that's prepared me a lot for the upcoming years. And yeah, it's made me feel really confident and in myself and in my game. So it's pretty exciting.
A mind-boggling when I mention a decorated amateur career, 130 titles you have over your time playing up until this point. And it's not like you're 50-something years old. This is incredible what you've done at such a young age. As you look through all those wins, which one has been the most memorable and most important to you?
That's a tough question. I think the winning the AJGA Mizuho Americas Open was pretty cool. It's a really cool setup to the tournament, and the girls get to play with the LPGA players, and we play in the same groups as them on the weekend, and it's really exciting. I got to play with Nelly Korda and watch her win as well, and also got the win myself. So it was a pretty cool round, and also really great experience for all the girls.
Gianna, we've seen some players on the LPGA Tour have near immediate success as teenagers. Others, there can be a learning curve before they find their footing as a professional. Is there anyone that you want to model your game after as you take this next step?
You know, I like to stick to myself, and nobody that I really want to model my game after, but somebody that I've really turned to for advice is Morgan Pressel. Obviously she bypassed the college route as well. And she gives really good advice about just what it's like to be a professional. And those first few years, I know it's going to be a grind and it's going to be tough, but I'm ready for it. I'm excited for it.
Gianna, some of the things that have been said about you, any athlete would hope to be talked about like this: an unapologetic competitor, loves the grind, loves to compete, loves the preparation. Where does that come from?
Just playing for so many years, I think. I've played, you know, pretty much my whole life at this point. So I've just always loved competing. I compete in everything that I do, and I just love tournaments. I love traveling. I love every single aspect of it, and that's why I've said for so long that I've just wanted to be on tour week to week, and just traveling like that is just, that's a dream for me.
Well, it's going to be a dream to cover you a whole lot more in front of you, Gianna. Congratulations on just being on the brink of a lot of special in front of you. Congratulations, and thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, we'll be watching.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
From one bright star to another, on the other side of the break, we'll catch up with the latest winner on the PGA Tour. What's changed for Michael Brennan? I would imagine a whole lot after his breakthrough win in Utah. We talk to him next.
Let's flash back just a couple weeks ago as Michael Brennan's time on the PGA Tour. Bank of Utah Championship, 23-year-old, won his first PGA Tour title in his third career start, his first as a professional, a sponsor invite, then gets the win in Southern Utah. Life-changing week in the desert. And with the victory, Brennan becomes eligible to take up PGA Tour membership, which includes exempt status through 2027, exemptions into the Players' Championship, RBC Heritage, and PGA Championship in 2026. So life comes at you fast if you're Michael Brennan, who joins us now on the show here on Golf Today. Michael, it was a couple months ago we had you on because you were the king of the PGA Tour Americas. You had three wins on that tour to get Korn Ferry Tour status. You now bypass the Korn Ferry Tour. What's life been like now as a newly minted PGA Tour winner?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It's been great. Last week and a half has been a little bit crazy. Just trying to figure out, you know, kind of what comes with being a tour member and a tour winner, but it's been awesome, and I'm super happy to be down here in Cabo right now.
Michael, as you look at this past few weeks, I know it's been a whirlwind. You just mentioned that. What has probably been the most pinch me moment? Like, wow, my life's kind of different now all of a sudden.
I don't know. That's a good question. I think I got credentials this week, like my official PGA Tour credentials, and that was pretty cool to get that and not have the sponsor invite credentials anymore. But it just feels so amazing to be out here and playing with the world's best.
Michael, you won eight times in college, but your career at times at Wake Forest, I mean, it's tied for the third most all-time in school history. So we knew you had a lot of potential when you came out here, but consistency was maybe something that you were searching for. You've gone on this absolute tear with the latter half of the PGA Tour Americas, getting three wins, and now a win on the PGA Tour, so four wins worldwide. How have you elevated the floor of your game to have such incredible consistency where you're always in contention?
Yeah, my coach and I really put an emphasis on trying to make fewer bogeys, and I feel like that kind of, and to do so, we have focused on the putting and the chipping, and I feel like that's really, really helped me. I'm getting into a better routine. I feel like I have a better understanding of what a practice day looks like, what I need to do. I'm doing the same things pretty much every single day, and I think that consistency, you know, along with some improved putting and chipping, has been the biggest improvement for me.
Michael, I hate to have you do this, but I was listening the last few days to an interview you did with our very own Smiley Kaufman, and you're talking about a story during your Korn Ferry Tour time. It was kind of became like a life or death moment. Can you, as best you can, retell that story? Because I thought it was such an entertaining one, and in the engagement you and Smiley had.
Yeah. So, we were in Rio for a PGA Tour Americas event, and we were catching an Uber. Just no one really rented a car, and we were Ubering from the airport to our hotel for the week, and it was about a 45-minute drive, and we get picked up in this really, really tiny car. This young kid, he spoke no English, just Portuguese, and I didn't even know a single word of Portuguese at the time, and I think I still maybe only know one. But we're in the car, and I'm always a little sketched out. Just we're driving through some, rough areas leaving the airport, and definitely a bit of a culture shock. But as we're going, I'm sitting behind the passenger seat, and so I can kind of see what the driver's doing, and I see on his phone he's taking screenshots of our Uber route and texting it to on his phone, and he's sending voice memos back and forth with whoever this person is, and I'm kind of trying on Google Translate to pick up maybe what their conversation is about, because I have, like I said, I have no idea what they could be talking about. And we get to a toll booth, and I seriously thought about getting out of the car, because I was pretty worried at that time. I was texting my buddies who were down there, sending them my location and my ride, and say, like, look, if we go off the path, like, come find us, because we're in trouble. But I figured if I got out, I would really have nowhere to go in the middle of a highway in Rio. So stayed in the car, and we ended up getting there, and nothing really happened. So I really have no idea what his conversation was about, but we got there safely, and we're all right.
Michael, it was certainly a wild ride in Rio, and hopefully a smoother sailing this week in Cabo. Good to spend some time with you on Golf Today.
We welcome in Austin Eckroat, and as we talk about Tommy Fleetwood and his potential for encores in the 26th season, you're standing in a very place where you're the reigning champion, Austin. So what can we expect in an encore? Yeah. Or better yet, a more fair question, what do you take away from last year going into the week this year?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always fun to come back to Cabo. I love this area. I actually won a college event here in 2019, so I've got some good vibes here. And, coming back and seeing all the, played the back nine today, some memories came flying back. And it's just fun to be back. And, obviously you want to go out and play well and, have a chance to do it again. Obviously that's the goal. So we'll see come Sunday.
Austin, you had that monster 2024 year, two wins on the PGA Tour. So now it's your second time in your career defending a title on the PGA Tour. For those of us who have never experienced that, what are the vibes like going into a week where you're the defending champion?
Yeah, I think I learned some things earlier this year at the Cognizant Classic. Defending there, you have more obligations. But then also just like, I thought I had an advantage. I went into it, I think, with the wrong mindset. But coming out to Mexico this time around, I know it's just everybody starts back at zero. I have no advantage. Because I've played well here doesn't mean anything. It's just, I got to go out and just try to win a golf tournament again, just like I do every other week. And, I just got to put in the same prep I always do. So, I definitely learned some things. Looking forward to getting back after it for sure.
Austin, you got a very casual, easygoing feel about you, which I know plays well on a golf course, and it's shown in your previous successes, especially there in Cabo. But as we talk to you, that number 106 clearly looms large in your FedEx Cup fall standings and the desire to get right inside that 100. How much of that pressure do you allow to come in as you get ready to go this week?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we were talking about, you know, yesterday, it's my situation's a little unique with it being, you know, I have status locked up through 27, but, you know, you still want to finish in the top 100. You want to keep your card. You don't want to, you know, carry, you know, have your PGA Tour status from the exemptions. You want to, you want to go earn it every year. And there's some, you know, I'd get into the players. There's a lot of things to play for. And, you know, like I was saying, in my situation, it's not quite as stressful, but it's still, you know, you want to do it and you want to finish in the top 100. This time of year is really stressful for a bunch of guys. And, you know, it makes it kind of fun. You know, there's guys playing for their lives out here right now. And, you know, a lot of good golf being played this time of year because of that.
Austin, I do want to go back to that because I love that comment that you made, and it got some headlines about you don't want to be one of these guys that's living off the exemptions and you want to go out there and earn it. Mm-hmm. There's a fire behind you that's clear. You just reiterated that statement again here with us. How motivating is that in your drive?
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, there's something to it about, you know, being, you know, every year you want to be competitive. And, you know, obviously I've had that safety net to fall back on, but you don't, you know, you don't want to use that safety net until it's necessary. You know, you want to be able to go and compete every week and continuously be one of the best players every year. And, you know, that's my goal. And, you know, I just had a rough year. And but, you know, I'm still in a position to where, you know, a couple good weeks coming in and I can, you know, I can keep my card, you know, in a way and get after it next year.
Austin, you've been searching for consistency this season at times. And there have been little tweaks with your game that you made. I remember talking with you at Travelers. You said a slight grip change had helped at the start of that week. Have you been able to diagnose or pinpoint what has changed in 2025 compared to what we saw in 24?
Yeah, it's, you know, how golf is. It's just a constant battle of, you know, minor adjustments, minor changes. And, you know, I think I just chased the wrong thing a couple times throughout the season. It's just a funny game. And, you know, I was making those minor adjustments in 24. I just kept making the right minor adjustments. And this year I made a couple wrong ones. And but, you know, I look at where my game is right now. You know, I feel very comfortable, very confident. You know, I've had some time at home. You know, things are in the right spot. And I feel very confident not only going into this week, but just the future of my game. It's just a funny game. You know, all of us that play it, you know, everybody knows what I'm talking about. Something works on Wednesday, you wake up Thursday morning, it's just not there. And just a lot of that this season.
For the viewers at home, what were the wrong paths that you've taken that are maybe now leading you in the right direction?
Right. Yeah, there was some, you know, all sorts of things. There was, you know, chasing some pressures throughout the golf swing, you know, ground forces that were the wrong thing. And then also just trying to think of, I mean, the mind of a PGA Tour player and in any golfer, there's about 100 swing thoughts that I've gone through this season. So there's a lot of them that have been, you know, either right or wrong. But that was probably the biggest one. And, you know, I did what everybody does. I chased a little bit of distance and I hit it far enough. You know, I won twice on the PGA Tour hitting it as far as I did last season. You know, I think I just, you know, got down the wrong path a couple times, but, you know, I'm very confident with, you know, my game, like I said, right now, and just trying to go back to what I, you know, what I've always done.
Austin, I was praising you for being an easygoing guy. I also appreciate how candid you can be on certain topics as it pertains to the PGA Tour, and one of those being the ability to play at the highest level on the PGA Tour, the ability to have a pathway to signature events, to chase a FedEx Cup championship, to do these type of things. How do you feel the current state as the PGA Tour is set up right now for golfers to all have the opportunity to get there? As you spoke about your year last year, it somewhat put you at a disadvantage coming into this season.
Yeah, there's, you know, there, you know, there's definitely a higher standard on the PGA Tour now with the signature events, but the, you know, there's a way in. Like even next year going into the PGA Tour season, I will be at somewhat of a disadvantage to make it to East Lake and just stuff like that. But you can play your way into those big events. Mm-hmm. You play good golf and you'll be rewarded. And I think that's more so now than ever on the PGA Tour. If you play good golf, you will be rewarded. And that's just, you know, the beauty of this game is, you know, there's no picking. It's just, you know, if you play good golf across every level, you'll play on the PGA Tour, you'll move up the rankings, and you know, there's no opinions that go into this game. It's just good golf.
Mm-hmm. What are the defending champion perks like this week?
Oh, they're great. They're great. You know, I've been an ambassador of Worldwide Technology now for 3 years, so I've been at this event with those perks, you know, them putting us up at a great hotel and getting to enjoy all the good food and stuff. But this week, you know, obviously getting to walk around, see my poster everywhere. There's just a lot of fun things that go on. You know, one of the biggest perks is just the memories that come back, you know, walking on property and seeing and remembering the shots I hit coming down the stretch. You know, making putts on 17 and then the bad one of chunking a chip on 18, but still managing to get it done. There's just all sorts of good things that come with it.
Austin, lastly, if you're hoping to have a little bit of deja vu and create some of those memories again, what's it going to take this week?
Yeah. It's the same thing as last year. You know, this golf course isn't very demanding off the tee. You know, fairways are wide, but just good iron play. I mean, that's the biggest thing out here. The greens are difficult. Second shot's really difficult. The wind starts to pick up. It's hard to get close. And the greens are really, really good. So, I mean, most guys are going to be making putts. It's just it comes down to the iron play. And, you know, that's what I did really well last year. And, you know, the guy that hits the irons the best this week is going to win.
Austin, always good to spend some time with you. Play well this week.
Yes. Thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Austin.
How about we go in the Wayback Machine all the way back to this summer, the 2025 U.S. Women's Open at Erin Hills. Haley Cooper was making her first start in the National Championships 2018. She had finished her four-day total 3-under in a tie for seventh place. It was a big moment for Haley. Took home more than $350,000, the first six-figure check in her career, and it was a big one in a lot of ways. So Haley continued her good play. Over on the Epson Tour, missed just one cut, racked up 8 top 10 finishes and 18 starts, 5 of which were top fives. She's now headed to the LPGA Tour for the first time in her career. Haley, one of 15 players to earn their LPGA Tour cards from the Epson Tour this past season. Last week, she was kind enough to stop by Golf Today with Damon Hack and Rex Hoggard right here.
And Haley Cooper joins us now. Haley, great to see you. I read where you gave yourself 2 years to make it to the LPGA, or you were going to drop golf, maybe do something else. Is that true? You're pretty tough on yourself.
Yes, I gave myself 2 years. I didn't even know if I wanted to play pro golf, so I was like, well, max 2 years, and pretty lucky I did it in a year and a half, about 2 years. So,
actually go a little bit deeper than that. The idea, you said you were quote-unquote glad that you spent a year and a half on the Epson Tour. I don't hear that from pros very often. What do you think the learning experience was like for you?
Yeah, the Epson Tour is just great with the competition. We have girls who are coming from college, girls coming from LET, other tours, girls coming back down from the LPGA. So we have a mix of a lot of talent, and I feel like I was not ready when I first turned pro to be able to play on the LPGA level. So hopefully that prepared me, and I guess I'll see you next year. So,
not ready in what way? Are you talking physically, mentally, emotionally? How would you describe it?
I would say all of it, just tour life in general. I think I came from college where everything's done for you, which is great, and I loved it, and it taught me a lot, but I started to have to do my own travel and book everything, so I think just figuring out how I do my system and my routine was different, so I was not ready immediately whenever I came out of college, so.
Now, you finished tied for seventh at this year's U.S. Women's Open. What did that experience mean to you, and what did you learn from that experience?
Yeah, I was just glad that I was able to play in the Open one time when I was a senior in high school. I just graduated. So I was super excited just to be able to go to the Open. My goal was to make the cut, and I did a lot better than that. But my family was there, and I think I figured out that my support team around me is great. And that I can do it. I do have the tools to be able to kind of do what I want to do on the big tour, the big circuit. So,
how did you stay out of your own way that week? Erin Hills, macho golf course, cameras everywhere. Beth Ann Nichols of Golf Week is there. All these reporters and folks following you. What did you learn about yourself, and how did you stay in your lane, stay in your process?
I'm gonna give a lot of credit to my caddy. I had Stacey Lewis's caddy, Travis Wilson, on the bag that week. And from the get-go, it was like just showing up to any other golf tournament. I didn't feel any pressure. He kept it super light, and we had great conversation. Even coming down 18, I had no nerves. The most nervous I think I was that week was on the first hole. And after that, I was like, we're good. We're just rolling. So it was a great experience, and to have him and that kind of experience in the bag just made me feel a lot better.
Now, you mentioned Stacy, you listed her as a bit of a mentor to you. What has that meant to have her in your life, both professionally and personally?
It's a huge blessing. She's an amazing person, amazing human, and she wants to grow the game of golf, which is just awesome. I consider her as you said, mentor. She's fantastic. I get to ask her any questions I want. I feel really privileged. And just have that relationship with her and her family. I don't feel like I'm just, you know, someone who asks her questions, but we can talk about anything. So she's been huge in my golf journey. I wouldn't be playing if it wasn't for her and her husband and her daughter and her dad. Her dad's actually caddied for me a couple times. So I'm just really blessed. The Lewis and Chadwell family have been really good to me. So.
And you also know Stacy was once the best player in the world. And your dad said, if you make it big, you'll be signing autographs till midnight. Why is that important for you to do, to give back one day?
I just think that growing the game is huge. Growing up, I was able to go to tournaments, and just getting Stacy Lewis's autograph just made me want to play golf more. I went to a clinic when I was 7 or 8, and Paula Creamer was giving the clinic. I'll never forget it. It was in San Antonio, I think. We had to drive in the morning, but I got there, and it was cold. She goes, "Hey, guys, who wants to come hit my wedge out of the bunker? We're going to do some bunker shots." And I was the only one who, like, raised my hand. And I got in the bunker with her, hit some bunker shots out, and I'll never forget that experience. I think giving back to the younger generation is going to grow, help make women's golf better, and then also just create, like, a bond with people. And I'm a big people person, so hopefully that can continue to grow.
Now, being a professional, I know, is a full-time job, but you did try your hand in moonlight a little bit as a caddy for a friend of yours earlier this month. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was great. I got to caddy for my friend Nicole Laura. She'll be on the Epson Tour next year. Unfortunately, we didn't make it through to stage 3, but she's a great player, one of my very best friends. So she asked me when we were at our tour championship at the Epson Tour. I was like, you know what? I have nothing going on that week. I won't be playing, so... sure. So I flew in, and we just had a great week. She's a great player, and it's going to be fun to see how she does this season. So.
Well, you're a bright light and clearly a wonderful friend as well. We wish you the best of luck in your rookie season in 2026. Thanks for joining us.
Thank y'all very much. Have a good day.
Great stuff there from the guys. Before we get to break, let's take a look at the Rolex Rookie of the Year standings. Miyu Yamashita from Japan leads the way, 11 top 10s featuring 2 wins in 25. Those 2 wins coming at the Maybank Championship, and she won her first major title this summer at the AIG Women's Open. Here are the current Rolex Player of the Year standings. Gino Titicoon leads the standings thanks to a season that included 2 wins and 13 top 10 finishes. Minji Lee, who earlier this year won the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, currently remains inside the top 3.
A lot to be decided as they're getting to the tail end of the LPGA Tour season. Same story on the PGA Tour. Beginning of the year, this man, Garrick Higo, had no sponsors and no full-time status on the PGA Tour. Then he won for the second time, and he has been on an absolute tear in the fall. We're going to hear from him on what's changed this season.
That flow is majestic.
Garrick Higo on the show. And Garrick, your last 3 starts, I want to get the numbers correct. T7, second T4. You get that second win in the Dominican Republic. How have you raised your game to this next level?
I think it's just been, I've changed my swing completely. A lot of hard work in that area. But just, belief that I have it, and this game is full of ups and downs. So, just continuing to work hard.
Garrick, looking at this week at T6 last year in this event, what do you take from last year's success, but also what this course is going to demand from you this week?
I mean, it's obviously really wide, you know, but it's penalizing if you do miss the fairways. So I think just being dialed with my irons and, you know, continuing to putt well is key this week, because I think all of us are going to hit a lot of fairways.
Beginning of the year, you're ranked outside the top 300 in the world golf rankings. You're playing some on the Korn Ferry Tour. Now, in the blink of an eye, you've won on the PGA Tour. You're top 60 in the FedEx standings, won for a second time on the PGA Tour, and you're 77th in the world golf rankings. So what's the ride been like these last 6 or 7 months? Have you seen the ups and downs in professional golf?
Yeah, it's been rewarding. I think, you know, all of us who play out here, you know, strive to play good golf. So when it happens, it's fun. And, you know, I'm just trying to take advantage of that.
You know, I'm looking at it, and we've made mention of them, those three consecutive top 10 finishes, how you've really captured something during this stretch of golf. And at times you've seen the patience provide for you. You've seen the aggressive nature provide for you. It's been a balancing of a bunch of different facets of your game that put you at this point. How do you continue mm-hmm. to take that going into this week and moving forward in what's been such a special stretch for you?
Yeah, I think key for me is my iron play. That's kind of been a weakness the last couple of years. Putting's always been the strength, you know, even when things weren't good. I've always relied on that. So, and, you know, driver, I've got decent length. So this week, with it being really wide, if I can, you know, stay on top of hitting good iron shots and giving myself good looks, I think, you know, it'll be a good week.
So you look like a totally different guy from the one we saw winning the Palmetto Championship in 21 to now. And I was reading one of the transcripts from your interviews recently, and you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, you grew out the hair just because you don't like going to the barber. Yeah. But now it's no longer a barber that you go to. You've graduated to a stylist. Yeah. So has this recent run of good form helped?
You can't hide money. You can't hide money.
Help you have enough coin on the side to be able to afford the increased line item now for a stylist?
Yeah, not quite. But I do put a lot of stuff in my hair for the frizz, so my hat fits, you know. So, no, I don't know. It started with that, you know, like not like, you know, who likes going to the barber shop? You know, it's like, I used to go quite often. My hair grows really fast, so it was nice. I just left it for a year. I think my last haircut was at Wyndham last year, and I cut it for the first time after Wyndham this year. So I think I'm going to keep it at this length.
My uncle would be offended. He's a barber. He would say a lot of people enjoy going to the barber. We're kind of disappointed, Garrick, you're wearing the hat. We wanted to see the flow in its purest form. But I do want to go back to the mindset going into a week like this, where it's going to require a low number. Mindset-wise, philosophically, your approach mm-hmm. going into the week, knowing the course isn't going to dominate you, but golfers are going to go out there and maybe put together some impressive numbers. How does that change your approach, given from maybe a different type of week?
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be all-out attack, I think, from the start. The par fives are pretty long, actually, and the par threes have some length to them. So I think, again, like I said earlier, you know, the guy who's gonna have a good putting week is probably gonna finish in the top 10. So I'm going to be as aggressive as I can be. I'm always really aggressive. So you'll see me hit driver on most holes, and I'll be going at most flags this week.
It's been a renaissance year for you as far as what you've been able to do with your career. You touched on the swing changes that have been a long process to get to this point. I've mentioned you're currently top 60 in the FedEx standings. What are the goals left for you to check this year to say, okay, I capped it off the right way leading into 26?
Yeah, I obviously want to finish in the top 60 to guarantee those first two elevated you know, events. But I think I want to play Augusta again next year. I've played it once, you know, and the first time I won out here, everything was a bit of a blur. You know, I think it happened maybe a bit too quick, but I wouldn't want it any other way. I learned a lot from that. So I think this time around, I'm a bit more prepared. I've got, you know, a lot of good people behind me. So, you know, I want to play in Augusta again next year and do well in the majors.
Good goals,
Dad. I was going to say, my Uncle Jack may come and find you down there in Cabo, show you that the barber can do something with that hair, brother.
Yeah.
He's like, no shot. Garrick, we appreciate your time, man. Best of luck.
Thanks for note that.
This week. He's like, yeah, keep him away from me.
Have a good one, Garrick.
Yeah, keep him away from me at night. Yeah, I'm gonna lock my door.